Welcome to Rise from the Ashes. Our podcast looks at various issues for families. We'll be talking with attorneys about personal and legal concerns having to do with divorce, custody, and parenting time. There are also a few topics about letting go, moving on, and new beginnings. Please keep in mind this podcast is only to inform and help to understand legal and personal issues as they relate to family law. It should not be considered as a replacement for a qualified family law attorney. When in doubt, please contact a professional. Rise from the Ashes, focusing on matters of the family, because family matters. Hi, and welcome to our podcast, Rise from the Ashes. I'm David Braddock. I'm going to be the host for the program. And today we're talking with Carlo Ficini. Carlo, you've been recording on our podcasts a few times. And today we're going to be talking about property in a divorce, whether it's marital or non-marital. Why do you think that's important?
It's absolutely crucial because when we're looking at the property, at the marital estate that we're trying to divide, it's important for everyone who's going through a divorce or thinking of a divorce to understand what the difference is between those two classifications when we look at the property aspect of the divorce and dividing among the two parties in the divorce.
Well, that kind of covers why you think it's important. It seems like the court probably thinks this is very important. Why do you suppose that this is important to the court?
You know, this is something that's crucial to the court because, as we've talked about in the past, a marriage is a contract in the eyes of a court. So what the court is looking to do in a divorce is sever that contract. And when it comes to property, both tangible, like actual items, right, and intangible, things like accounts, whether it be retirement accounts or whether it be just regular savings accounts, the court needs to understand and have a firm handle on what exactly is the property of both the parties, that being marital property, and what is the property that came in maybe before the marriage with one of the parties, or something like an inheritance or something of that nature. Those are things that can be considered non-marital.
I know we've talked on another podcast about the summons, and I believe you mentioned a little something about the shell game analogy.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and how it relates to marital or non-marital property?
Yeah, so the shell game is a very apt analogy when dealing with marital versus non-marital property, because what the court's trying to do is figure out what is the marital estate. In this context, the marital estate is all the marital property from the two parties and what the marital estate is comprised of. And once we know what the marital estate is comprised of, what accounts are marital, what property as far as real property, what houses, which of those are marital, vehicles, things of that nature. Once we know what the marital estate is, then we can go about dividing it. And that shell game goes back to the summons, like we talked about on the previous podcast you referenced. And it's that notion of if the property keeps moving around, then the court and everyone else involved, we're not going to be able to determine what that marital estate is, let alone divide that marital estate.
Now, we get to the idea of an asset balance sheet. You've mentioned that on another podcast as well.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the asset balance sheet. What are we looking for in a settlement, or what is the court looking for with respect to how this relates to this property, whether marital or non-marital?
Sure. So once we have a firm understanding of what property is marital, then what we do is when we look at figuring out how the estate should be divided among the parties, it's an asset balance sheet, meaning we've got one side is one party's and the other side is the other party's. So if we have Bob and we have Jan, one side of the column is Bob's, one side of the column is Jan's. And then what we do is we look at, okay, if we give this car with this valuation to Bob and we give this car with this valuation to Jan, what's the difference? And then we talk about things like equalizer payments to basically try to make the two columns equal or as close to equal as we can. You know, there's some back and forth, obviously, when you're doing a settlement. While there might be a dollar value on a piece of property, someone might value that a little differently, and there's a back and forth. But the goal is to try and get that as close to equal as we can so that the parties can move on and that marital estate is essentially pretty close to equal.
What if one of the sides is determined that this particular piece of property maybe the flat screen TV, whatever it is, it could be something sure. else. They're convinced that they had that before the marriage, but it might not have been, but they're convinced.
Right. So absolutely, that does happen from time to time where we have this issue where it's a matter of someone is claiming that a piece of property is non-marital and it might not in fact be. First, let's back up, David, a little bit and talk about what is non-marital. What qualifies something to be non-marital? Typically what that is something that's brought into the marriage that was purchased prior to marriage and then isn't really used for marriage purposes.
Perhaps a vehicle?
Sometimes we see a vehicle. Yep. A vehicle is a good example of that.
A particular, maybe a vintage vehicle.
Vintage cars are quite common. They would fall into there. Another one is if we have things like gifts, family gifts. Artwork is a big one, David. Artwork is one where a lot of people will say, well, it came into the marriage. I had it prior to marriage. I purchased it prior to marriage. And this is something that is not marital property. Furniture is one you'll see every now and then. A dining room table, things of that nature. And so what we need to look at then is, okay, well, first, is it indeed non-marital? So when was it purchased? Or sometimes people just agree, yeah, that person brought that into the marriage. We didn't buy it jointly. We didn't buy it from joint funds. Once we've established when it was purchased or there's an agreement as to it being non-marital, then we go to, okay, well, that goes off the asset sheet.
Anything that's determined as non-marital, that is not a part of the asset balance sheet.
Right, because what we're trying to do with that asset balance sheet is split up the marital estate, meaning the property that the parties own or have an interest in that is strictly marital. So if it's a non-marital piece of property, it's not even on the sheet. It's totally off. It's
yours. You can have it. Not do with it as you will.
Right. Exactly.
The obvious things with respect to property that can be determined as marital property, houses, furniture items, vehicles, things that are solid, tangible objects. Is there anything else that might be not necessarily considered immediately as marital property?
Whenever we hear property, we automatically go to, oh, land, or, oh, something I can hold, right? A desk, something that's tangible.
Okay.
But when we're looking at the marital estate, property also means not just what we call in the law real property, which that would be the tangible items, the real estate, but it also means accounts, money, stocks, investment accounts, retirement accounts, all those accounts, basically anything that has a dollar value that can be attached to it. Those can be considered part of the marital estate. They can also be considered non-marital as well.
If it's considered marital, it's on the asset balance sheet, what is the rule? Now, I'll tell you why I ask. I've always thought of the rule, it's fair, is 50-50 split. It's solid, equal.
Yeah, we try to, like I alluded to earlier, when we do an asset balance sheet, we try to get everything as close as we can. The language is a little opaque. It's a fair and equitable division usually is what we look at. And it's more or less, we're trying to get it as close as we can.
Okay.
That's the bottom line. I mean, it's really something that we could probably talk about for an entire podcast in and of itself, just what exactly is the rule and why, but it's a little opaque.
So there's some trade-offs that sometimes happen between certain items, and then the parties decide amongst themselves or throughout the process, whether it's mediation or whether it's even done right in front of the judge or the judge assists them somehow.
It's going to be very difficult when you think about it to get a clean 50-50 split because we may not have the right amount on each side if we look at certain pieces of property because you're not going to take a car and split a car in half.
Right.
You know, you're going to take a car and you're probably going to say, okay, well, one person gets this car and the other person gets this car. As most couples usually have two vehicles.
But this person's vehicle is obviously much more valuable.
Right.
So then something has to happen there.
Exactly. So we try to funnel it from somewhere else. We try to do a swap off with a different piece of property or an account. Because again, we're still got accounts that we can work with too, depending on the length of the marriage and depending on obviously, everybody's job. There might be retirement accounts we can try to work with. And I'm sure that's something we'll speak more in depth in another podcast about is how do we deal with retirement accounts when we do dissolutions? But those are spots that we can use things to kind of make each side pretty darn close.
We're kind of bouncing back and forth here between marital and non-marital property, which is basically what this podcast is about. Maybe we could go through some of the examples of non-marital property. We just covered in depth a little bit about marital property. What are some examples of non-marital property?
Let's just go through them. Common examples of things that typically get put into the non-marital property category. We talked on another podcast, David, about pets. And how pets are property. The court looks at a pet as property. So if someone brings a pet into a marriage that they've had since high school, or maybe it's an old family pet that they brought in, the old family dog, a lot of times that's something that we can look at it and we see, okay, well, is this non-marital? And a lot of times it is something that we can couch as non-marital, and meaning that's off the ledger, right? That's not on the asset balance sheet. Gifts, I spoke about that earlier, like gifts from family. So I mean money gifts. So inheritances, bequests, if somebody left you a bunch of money, you know, the rich uncle left you a bunch of money and just left it to you and not to your spouse, depending on what you do with that money, that is going to be treated as non-marital. Now, where it gets tricky is if those funds are then used or put in a joint account with your spouse or used for something for the marital relationship. So maybe it's used to pay down a joint debt. Then we have issues that maybe some of that is marital, or maybe all of it's marital. Maybe it lost its kind of non-marital nature. So that's kind of one of those aspects where it really helps to speak with an attorney. These can get a little tricky. And then the big and obvious one is if you have a valid and enforceable prenup, which in Minnesota we call it an anti-nuptial agreement. But if you have a valid anti-nuptial agreement and it says that the antique dining room set, in the event of a divorce, the antique dining room set is to go to your spouse, then that's going to be non-marital.
Are there any exceptions with respect to reasons that an attorney would make an exception about marital or non-marital property?
I hit on one of them briefly earlier, this idea of if we've got a piece of property that could be characterized as non-marital, but then it's used for a marital purpose, either in whole or in part, then we want to look and figure out how do we determine what's marital and is there any non-marital left? It's a good reason to reach out to an attorney to kind of make sure that that's looked at properly and that you're not just doing guesswork on, oh, I got a $10,000 cash inheritance and I used X amount of it for a debt that was joint and now I've still got Y amount left over. You know, that's not something I would recommend that anybody does on their own or tries to do as guesswork. That'd be something that I'd say you should go speak to an attorney. Another reason for an attorney would be if you have retirement accounts. When you have a retirement account, it can be essentially a mixed asset, meaning it can have a marital property aspect to it as well as a non-marital property aspect to it. And this goes for pensions, this goes for any type of retirement account. If you come into a marriage with a retirement account at a company, what you come into the marriage with, that's going to be non-marital property. And then the marital portion of that retirement account is essentially what happens, how the retirement account grows from the point of marriage to the point of separation. And that's where we look at, okay, well, that's the portion, that's a snapshot that's marital. And that's why an attorney's important there, because we can help you figure out what is exactly part of the marital estate and what should not be on the ledger at all.
And you said that that time period was best illustrated from the time of the actual marriage contract,
right,
to the time of separation.
Yes, that's what we're looking at most likely, is that period that we can figure out, okay, we have a clear start point, we have a clear end point, and now we need to look and see what exactly is going on as far as that retirement fund or pension or whatever it is. And then we can figure out how that factors into the marital estate.
When it comes to property division, it seems like there's a few buzzwords. I see them written here, so I'll just throw them at you. You're the attorney. How about this one? Non-marital tracing. What is non-marital tracing?
Non-marital tracing is a process through which we look at how a non-marital asset, let's take a car, for example. We've been talking about cars. So let's take a car. Somebody brings a car into the marriage. They take that car, they own outright in their own name.
Okay.
And they use that down the road during the course of the marriage. You know, they trade it in for another car. So they trade it in for another car, and that car is used within the family, right? That's a family car. Let's say you traded in the sports car for the minivan.
Okay.
All been there. So we take that, and now what we're doing as attorneys is we're looking at trying to determine what's the interest from that non-marital car. What's the value? What was that used for in the marital car? And we trace to find that asset, that interest, that the person who traded in the sports car, their non-marital interest in that marital asset, which is now the van.
Okay.
So it's kind of, you're trying to trace, right? We're tracing is what we're doing. We're trying to link the two. We see this commonly in retirement accounts. If somebody has a retirement account that they bring into the marriage, it's not marital. Let's say they switch jobs and you got to roll that over, right?
Right.
So you roll that over in an account at the job that you have now, and that job you started during the marriage. So there's this issue of we need to trace that non-marital interest in that now marital account. And you don't want to leave this kind of to chance or to kind of guesswork, because when we're talking about retirement accounts, this could be a lot of money. This is usually with larger type assets. This isn't with a tea set, unless it's an antique tea set, maybe. I don't know.
Okay, here's one. I don't know how much you're going to want to get into depth on this one, but I'll throw it at you. The Schmitz formula.
Schmitz formula. So that's in Minnesota specific. What it is it's the name for the way in which we try to determine the non-marital interest in a piece of real estate. It's a formula that we use as practitioners to try and figure out, okay, what's the non-marital interest in this piece of real estate or property? I'm not going to bore the listeners with the inner workings of this. The reason it's called the Schmitz formula is because it's from the Schmitz case. The guy's name was Schmitz, and that's how we named it. We're not very creative in the law.
Okay. Now, this one seems like it might be kind of a biggie.
Sure.
So I'll just throw these buzzwords at you, and you can elaborate on what it means. Here it is, active versus passive appreciation.
Yes. So in Minnesota, there's been a clear distinction made by the courts as to how to treat active appreciation and how to treat passive appreciation. So let's first tackle into what these things are. This usually is when we're talking about assets like real estate, stock, retirement accounts, things of that nature. Active appreciation is when we have an increase in value to an asset. So let's say a retirement account. We have an increase in a value to an asset that is a result of action by one of the parties, and that's why the asset has increased in value. Let's take a house, for example. That's a real easy way to look at it. So if we have a house, and let's say that that house has increased in value because you redid the kitchen or you redid the bathroom, these big type of projects, and that's caused the increase in value to the home. The resulting increase is deemed active appreciation, and that increase can create a marital interest even if the property itself was a non-marital property.
Ah.
Okay. Then if we look at passive appreciation.
Okay.
The courts of Minnesota have deemed that passive appreciation, it's a non-marital asset. So that's something like if you have a savings account that's non-joint, it's non-marital, you're accruing some level of interest on that savings account. It's nominal, but you're accruing that interest. That interest that's automatically accruing, that's not a marital asset. That's non-marital.
Oh.
Because you're not actually doing anything to raise the level of that account. You're not actually putting a whole bunch of money in there to raise the level.
Okay.
Does that make sense, David?
I believe so. It seems like where it could be perceived by those that don't understand the law, which is where good attorneys are able to clarify this for their clients, where a person might actually claim, well, even though you had that account beforehand, all of this interest was acquired while we were married, therefore that should be
right,
partly mine too. But you're saying that that doesn't necessarily apply in that
right
case.
It does not necessarily. It depends on what kind of appreciation we're looking at. But again, this is one of those reasons why it really helps to meet and speak with an experienced family law attorney so we can help you understand the differences here, because it is somewhat nuanced.
Well, that really clarifies a lot. Is there anything further that you'd like to add about marital or non-marital property?
As our listeners have probably already figured out based on the discussion we've had just now, David, it can be very complicated. So it's really important when any aspect of a divorce, but especially when trying to figure out what's in the marital estate and trying to figure out the property division, it's absolutely crucial that you go speak with a good family law attorney, an experienced family law attorney who can help you navigate these waters and figure out what's in the actual marital estate and what shouldn't be in the marital estate that might be in there. It doesn't necessarily have to be our law firm, but regardless of where you're listening, it's really crucial that you go out and find a family law attorney.
Thank you so much, Carlo.
Thank you, David.
You are listening to Rise from the Ashes, the podcast channel that takes a careful look at all things having to do with legal procedure within the family law process. Rise from the Ashes is sponsored by Mundahl Law, who specializes in assisting families and individuals through the legal process with respect, dignity, and caring. Mundahl Law is dedicated to helping people to solve their legal problems. You can visit the Mundahl Law website at mundahllaw.com or call to schedule a consultation with one of their qualified family law attorneys. Rise from the Ashes, focusing on matters of the family, because family matters.